Germany's Mosel Valley has been producing fine Riesling wines since Roman times. Many local winemakers fear that tradition is now threatened by a huge bridge and roadway being built across the Mosel River. They've launched an international campaign to stop the project, but as NPR's Eric Westervelt reports, the Mosel Bridge has its supporters too.
Fourth-generation winemaker Katharina Prum sits in a stately living room in her family's turn-of-the-century manor house. Her family's vineyards and house hug the steep banks of the Mosel River. Oil portraits of her great-grandparents, looking stern and intense, hang on either side of a window that looks out onto wineland that was first worked by those ancestors more than 200 years ago. Prum sees the massive bridge and roadway project as the biggest threat to the area since the great late 19th century phylloxera insect epidemic that ravaged European vineyards.
A very, very monstrous big bridge, which is more than 160 meters high, higher than the Cologne Cathedral, and more than a mile long. It's a monster in this valley.
The 31-year-old, who runs the winery with her father, says she's not some wine snob worried about the view. The sprawling bridge, she fears, will not only spoil the landscape, some call Germany's Napa Valley, but also damage the vineyard's natural watering system, a forested area at the top of the vineyards, which slowly drains water down the steep slopes, almost like someone steadily wringing out a sponge.
There was never an attack like this one. There has been a wine culture since about 2,000 years. You find pressing rooms from Roman times, and this area has been protected by all the generations which have lived here in the past 2,000 and more years. And this is kind of an attack to the region.
The road bridge was originally conceived more than 40 years ago as a way to connect two American and NATO air bases that are now gone. Prum calls the project a Cold War relic that needs to be scrapped, like that conflict. Now Prum and some other Mosel Valley producers are turning to international fans of German Rieslings for help, including several world-renowned wine critics such as Hugh Johnson. He called the bridge project, quote, idiocy and a crime. A campaign called A Bridge Too Far just started in major UK supermarkets. The largest-selling German Riesling there will carry a neck-holder label urging drinkers to help stop the highway. But the proponents are becoming more vocal as well. In the quiet village of Urzisch on the banks of the Mosel, winemaker Robert Eimile ducks into one of his estate's cellars. The musty cavern was built in the 12th century by Cistercian monks who were evidently diminutive and liked to make and drink wine.
Be careful here. These cellars are built 1177. And therefore it's, you see the wall is not so high.
The monks were short, yes.
Yeah. And fat.
Eimile is quick with a smile and wears a Let's Visit the Tasting Room sparkle. Like the Prums just down the river, the Eimiles have been making world-class Rieslings here for more than 200 years. German oak wine barrels the size of Volkswagen sit chained to the cellar floor in case they get the idea of floating away during the annual Mosel River flooding.
It's in winter time, and they open the barrels, and therefore the wines are perfect with fish.
Eimile has now embraced the giant bridge and roadway where others see disaster. Once opposed to it, today he says the bridge is like a 747 on the runway about to take off, so just get out of the way. Eimile sees the smaller towns along the Mosel, such as Urzisch, slowly dying. New families aren't moving here. Gorgeous old slate homes sit empty and unsold. Fewer and fewer tourists spend the night. The big bridge, he says, will help reinvigorate the area.
Many critics say they are sitting in London or in San Francisco or in New York. They really don't know the problems of population we have here. You know, we can die in beauty if we like that, but we want to live and we want to have good roads and good streets to the places where people can work. We live here in the end of the world, and therefore it's important for us that the world comes to us.
I'm sure people will come and look in wonder at the bridge, he adds cheerfully, like how people gaze at the bridges of Istanbul. That seems zealously hopeful, and based on little other than Eimile's natural optimism, like his frequent assertion that 95% of the people here support the bridge project. There has been no poll. But many in the valley, at least anecdotally, seem resigned to the project. Vintner Peter Schmidt sells his Riesling and Pinot Noir wines in the bustling riverside tourist town of Bernkastel-Kues.
Ich finde es nicht besonders attraktiv fürs Auge.
I don't find the bridge attractive to the eye, and I don't think we really need the bridge. Tourists have been coming to the region for the past 60 years, and their numbers are increasing every year, thank goodness. The bridge won't help us, but in Germany, once the wheels of bureaucracy start to grind, it is almost impossible to stop them.
Schmidt may be right. Bulldozers have already started building the highway leading to the bridge. One small glimmer of hope for opponents is that Germany's federal transport minister has warned of cuts to road projects in this age of austerity. But he's made no mention so far of stopping the Mosel Valley project. And unique in Germany to the state of Rhineland-Palatinate, where the bridge is being built, the regional transport and economy minister is also the minister of wine agriculture. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Bern-Kassel-Kues.
This is NPR.
In many neighborhoods around the country, foreclosed homes are a common sight. Those empty houses are often neglected. They bring down property values for the remaining homeowners as well. In Cleveland, one judge is testing out a novel judicial tactic to help those neighbors. From member station WCPN, Mari Saito reports.
On a hot afternoon on a quiet street on Cleveland's southeast side, 74-year-old Yvonne Means stands in her carefully manicured yard, watering the tomatoes, green beans, and a sickly-looking set of collard greens.
I've got to get some medicine for this one. Ooh.
But what really gets this retiree upset is the house across the street. When it sold in 2004, Means had her own house appraised. It came in at $70,000. Means didn't sell her house, but the one across from her went into foreclosure. Now you can barely see the boarded-up windows because the shrubs are so overgrown. Means had her own home appraised again last spring.
But now it's priced at $50,000, so that's about, what, 20 less? And I really don't invite my friends over. I'm just ashamed of my street now, I really am. You know, the houses and that are not kept up.
Means and her neighbors recently received letters from Cleveland Municipal Housing Court Judge Raymond Pianca, telling them that one of the former owners of that empty house, mortgage giant Fannie Mae, was found guilty of housing code violations. As part of its remedy, the court ordered the company to pay restitution. Tomorrow, Pianca will hold a hearing to determine whether neighbors like Means can prove they suffered economic loss because of the house that Fannie Mae owned. Emory University School of Law professor Frank Alexander says it's an unusual move for a housing court judge.
Criminal law has long afforded the possibility that a criminal defendant who is found guilty can be ordered to pay restitution to a victim. What is unusual in this case is that the victim are the adjoining owners who did not initiate the lawsuit necessarily. This lawsuit was initiated by the city.
To complicate matters, an attorney for Fannie Mae says the property was supposed to have transferred to Aurora Loan Services in 2008, before the violations were written up. But the paperwork wasn't filed until last spring. A Fannie Mae spokesman says tomorrow the company hopes to clear up just who owns the house. Judge Pianca also sent similar letters to neighbors of another rundown Cleveland house that's so bad it's now condemned. The defendant in that case is a Utah-based company called Go Invest Wisely LLC. Company officials did not respond to requests for comment. Cleveland Law Director Robert Triazzi says the proposed restitution hearings may help frustrated homeowners.
It is an appropriate recognition that other people other than the city itself has been harmed here.
But in an editorial, the Cleveland Plain Dealer wrote that Judge Pianca's restitution hearings risk overstepping the bounds of impartiality. And legal experts point out that neighbors can already sue negligent owners through nuisance or trespass laws. Others worry that restitution claims could scare off much-needed investors. Some Cleveland homeowners will be closely watching the restitution hearings. The defendant from Utah, Go Invest Wisely, also owned a dilapidated and graffiti-covered house a few doors down from retiree Edith Crum.
They bought the houses, then they go live somewhere else in beautiful mansions, and we stuck down here. It lowers the property value, and what can you do?
What Crum and her neighbors are doing is working with a group of local housing activists to try and get the property condemned. And depending on how tomorrow's restitution hearings go, Crum says the group may also head to housing court for its share of any restitution money. For NPR News, I'm Mari Saito in Cleveland.
Among the casualties of the financial crisis were the reputations of the major credit rating agencies. Instead of warning investors about risky mortgage-backed securities, the agencies said they were fine. Yesterday, federal regulators approved a first step to reducing the agency's role. NPR's Anthony Brooks reports.
The big rating agencies, Moody's Investors Service, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch Ratings, were supposed to serve as the nation's financial gatekeepers, but they assigned their best grades, AAA, to some of those disastrously risky subprime mortgage-backed securities, which went bad and helped cause the housing bust. The landmark financial overhaul law, enacted last month, calls for reducing the influence of the rating agencies. And the first step was approved yesterday by the board of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. The FDIC voted to take public comment on a better way to assess the risk that banks are taking. Some say that's easier said than done.
If it was easy to find alternatives, people would have done it a long time ago.
That's Claire Hill, a professor at the University of Minnesota Law School.
This is not the first time they've goofed. Remember Enron? There's a long history of goofs, and every time there's some story about why they won't goof again.
In fact, before yesterday's vote, FDIC Chairman Sheila Bair said the task of replacing the agencies with a better substitute will not be so simple. It won't be quick either. After the public comments, the FDIC will propose new rules in a process that's expected to take months. Anthony Brooks, NPR News.
The Federal Reserve is concerned that the economy is slowing down, so it's taking some steps to prevent that. Federal officials have decided to buy U.S. Treasury securities. Essentially, the Fed is loaning money to the U.S. government. This keeps money flowing into the economy. The new strategy is being introduced after a disappointing jobs report last week raised new doubts about the strength of the economy. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports.
Fed officials leave no doubt they are growing more concerned about the weakening economy. They say high unemployment is constraining household spending. Housing is depressed. Bank lending continues to contract. Bernard Baumol of the Economic Outlook Group says it's an economy that is still struggling.
It's growing, but it's very tepid, very anemic kind of growth. And the Fed knows it has to do something more.
With interest rates already at historically low levels, the Fed's options are limited, and the financial markets were rife with speculation before the meeting about what steps the Fed would take. The new Fed strategy is a moderate one. In difficult times like these, the Fed typically buys securities such as mortgage bonds and treasury bills. Former Federal Reserve Governor Randall Krosner says it's a way of pouring money into the financial system.
That helps to make credit conditions a little bit easier and hopefully provide a little bit more support for housing markets, a little bit more support for consumption, for investment.
Since the financial crisis erupted 2 years ago, the Fed has been steadily buying more and more securities, and it has about $2 trillion worth of such assets on its balance sheet. Now the Fed says it will take the money it makes from the sale of mortgage assets and reinvest it into treasury bills. The amount of money involved is not huge, and Krosner says this shift in strategy by itself is unlikely to have a huge impact on the economy. But he says it will send a message to the financial markets.
It's much more about expectations. It's much more about the Fed's readiness to provide support if the economy softens further. And I think that is the key thing that the Fed is taking a step to try to bolster confidence that the Fed can and will act if the economy worsens appreciably.
By pouring so much money into the financial system, the Fed is pursuing a strategy that still makes some investors nervous because it could lead to higher inflation down the road. But Krosner says that's not really a big worry for the Fed right now.
I think in the short to intermediate run, it's very hard to see any inflation pressures. Inflation expectations are low. There's no wage pressure. Prices are basically flat and even for the last few months falling a little bit.
Krosner says that gives the Fed some room to act, and the pressure on Federal Reserve officials to do something is growing. Friday's disappointing jobs report was only the latest piece of evidence of how weak the economy is. With a political climate so divided in Washington, hopes for any more stimulus spending seem faint. The Fed still has some options it can pursue, like stepping up its purchases of securities. And as the months drag on and the recovery remains so weak, it will be forced to consider new strategies to get the economy moving. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.